Welcome to Truest Blood, the official True Blood podcast.
I'm Kristen Bauer.
And I'm Deborah Ann Wohl.
And you've been invited in. I want to do bad things with you.
On Truest Blood. Welcome back to Truest Blood, where we sink our fangs into the series bite by bite.
This week is just for us, Truvies. Mm-hmm. It's time to let you in on all the season three secrets and discuss some of the ways an actor prepares.
What didn't happen in this season, Deb? I mean, this is so massive.
There's a lot. Oh, boy. We have vampire politics. We have werewolves.
We have kings. We have royalty. Royalty. This season.
Daywalking.
Shenanigans, man.
There's a lot to cover. So, you know what? Let's just jump right in with some of our highlights. Kristen, this is our episode. We have no guests for this. It's just right. You and me.
Yep.
We get to talk about our favorite things from this season and some of our own personal recollections.
I know.
About this season. This is a wild one. Yeah.
This is a wild one. I mean, I could talk forever about this because so much happens.
God, we even just sitting here like preparing to do this conversation. We were like, oh, well, we have to remember to mention that and that.
Right.
So I think let's start by streamlining a little and go like, what are our favorite things from this season?
Okay.
That aren't us, right?
Like, okay, yeah. Okay, you go.
That are all of our other fabulous people that we adore.
You start.
Well, okay, I'll start with this. Of course, I mean, Nelson Ellis, Kevin Alejandro, this love story for Lafayette and Jesus breaks me every single time. I watched this season at least twice for this situation, and it's so beautiful and the ups and downs of it. And I buy every second of it.
Yeah.
And then add to that the cherry on the top of Alfre Woodard coming into play Lafayette's mother. And it is a wild role.
Yeah.
But I have been such a fan of her. She's been one of my acting inspirations since I was a little girl, and she was doing Kasdan movies, you know, and I have just always loved her energy and her take on characters. And so for her to have been on this show, I remember when she was doing it at the time, just being very nervous. Anytime I'd see her like over there, we didn't ever interact. And then she did Luke Cage. So I went to the premiere of that and I saw her and I was like, Deborah, you go and you say hello to her and you tell her that she's been an inspiration to you for your entire life. And I chickened out.
I know.
I just am not, I can't do it. I can't do it. Part of me is because I don't want to like fade into the like sea of adoring masses, you know?
Right.
And like, if I ever do get a chance to meet her and tell her how much she means to me, I would like it to be in like a significant way that might stick, you know? So I think I just didn't want to. But I might not ever get the chance again. I hope you're listening, Alfre. I just think you're amazing.
God loves you. It is really challenging because you see that a lot of people are saying what you're going to say.
Yes.
Right? So I don't want to tax them more. Yes. I don't want to exhaust them more. I don't want to make it about me and be like, I just have to tell you. And we're on the same show.
I know.
Right? Like, how do you, like it? It's awkward no matter how you phrase it. So when fans come up to us, I always understand when they're like, oh, I'm sorry, I'm nervous or whatever, I'm like, yes, we're nervous to talk to Alfre Woodard.
I feel the same way. Well, the thing, too, though, that is so exciting, though, is that you might get the opportunity to actually then work with someone like
this.
So when I look at the team up of Kevin and Nelson and Alfre, and I just think, what fun they must have been having, the challenges, like the good like acting challenges of that. I just, there's so much love just radiating between all three of them. I love that storyline. And that dream, that V trip that Lafayette and Jesus
That was challenging to film, I think.
Well,
did you hear about that?
I didn't. Well, if you know a good story, you have to tell me, because what it is it's the Haunted Mansion, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's a Disney ride where they're sitting in a cart and they're being twisted around and they're hearing the things. It's such a genius take.
I know. We need to get Kevin on the show because I think they had cameras strapped to them.
That makes sense. I remember that rig. There was a rig where you would wear a camera, which it's very Martin Scorsese.
Yeah.
Where it's just you are, you know, still in the center of the frame and the environment moves around you.
Right.
And yes, it makes it look like that.
It's an
like
acid a haunted, trip, right?
It looks like a haunted mansion ride. Yeah.
And I think it's hard because we got to get them on.
Yeah.
Because I think they had to be strapped together, you know, to stay in the frame, and one person had to wear the camera. But that whole sequence, I mean, it's just, you know, now sauna is ridiculous.
Well, no, so they're taking each other's lines.
Yeah.
You know, and some of it's obviously going to be ADR and some of it isn't. And you're probably having to find things in your environment that aren't really there.
Yeah.
It must have just been a wild shoot day.
That's a wild shoot day or more than
more
a day.
Could have been,
I don't
yeah.
know. Yeah. Yeah, that's a huge storyline.
And big
so beautiful.
Line. Yeah. How about you? What's a favorite of yours?
Yeah, I've got so many this year, it's no. hard to go to. But you and I were talking about Russell and Talbot.
Oh, my God.
Right? I mean, what the F?
I know.
Let's talk about Talbot, Theo.
Theo Alexander. It doesn't, like, Russell's storyline hinges on the love that he has for Talbot.
Yeah.
Even though before it, when we see it, there's, you know, there's strain and all of that that happens, you know, when you've been with someone for 900 years or whatever their relationship has been.
That is commitment.
But the reality that they brought to it, and it really, you know, Theo's performance really made me think about the partners to powerful people.
Right.
And you know, that is, there's almost a cliche about that, but he brought so much nuance to it. And that, you know, Russell is such a powerful person who could kill any human or vampire or werewolf in a heartbeat.
Yes.
And yet Talbot has this hold on him.
Yeah.
And who is that person? And I'm like, oh, I want a whole show just about that person.
Me too. I wrote down so many quotes of Talbot's because his delivery is so unbelievably fantastic.
It's funny. It's authentic.
Yes.
It's cutting.
Yes.
Oh.
Isn't it amazing?
Yeah.
I mean, after Lorena is burned and she's like, he's like, oh, Lorena, I'm so sorry. You know, the king. And then she says, I'm fried, but I'm fine. And then Talbot's like, but the rug.
Well, here's another line too, where when I think it's Franklin comes in and he's like, it's, you know, you don't want to be too matchy-matchy, but you guys are clashing with my decor. So great.
It's endlessly great. Yeah,
endlessly great. I mean, the lines for him written are great. His delivery is great.
Right.
And he really, you know, that relationship, the extremes to which Russell has to go to at the end of the show doesn't work unless Theo and Dennis are top of their game at the beginning of this show.
Yeah, they really love
and
each other.
And a fun BTS about. So when you see the exterior of their house in Jackson.
Yeah.
So this building is a national landmark. It's called Nuts Folly.
Oh, yes. Yes.
It is one of the few octagonal buildings in the United States. So it's literally an octagon. There were 32 rooms planned, but they only finished 9 of them before the Civil Wars broke out. And it was, you know, a plantation owner by the name of, I think, Harlan Nutt was his name. So because he couldn't finish it after the war and, you know, everything changed, it was called Nuts Folly.
And people think True Blood is over the top.
Like, no, exactly. There you go. So that's the building. That's the exterior of that building. The family that lives there has to live in the basement because none of the rooms
Someone
were finished.
There?
Yeah, there's only like a few rooms in the basement that are done. So I just love that was the exterior of this, you know, elaborate king's mansion because they only got that part done. And it really does work. And then to think that Suzuki then had to go and create an interior.
That makes sense for the exterior. And the interior doesn't even exist.
Right. But it has that incredible rotunda.
It has the rotunda.
That they all played in, which is so great. And then lots of other little touches, like they're using gold flatware instead of silverware.
Good
so
catch.
Genius.
So genius.
There's like Waterford crystal all over the place.
Yes.
And of course, all his collections. That, you know, again, Suzuki's amazing.
And the food stylists that they had to get to come up with meals for vampires.
The gelato.
Yes, the gelato. Oh my, and it's absolutely delicious.
Yeah.
Yuck, yuck. And then we were also talking about how amazing the Mickens are.
Yes. So Cooper Huckabee, which we decided is one of the greatest names ever. Yeah. And J. Smith Cameron, another incredible name. But so they play the Mickenses, Sam's biological parents. And again, I mean, for a storyline that could go a lot of different ways, could get very cheesy or cliche, something about them, again, they're so cutting and mean, but you also, you feel for them. Every time Jay Smith starts to get upset that she's, you believe she loves her boys. Mm-hmm. She loves them no matter what damage she does.
Mm-hmm. And loves her husband. Ooh. And he is so layered. I just saw last night again this scene where he comes in wanting Marshall's character Tommy to come home, and Sam goes ballistic. Yeah. And then he goes from raging alcoholic to completely sorrowful.
Yeah.
And everyone, the performances are staggering. I mean, Sam has such an arc this year from nice guy to nice. And they really set that up, you know, because I was like, he's being a little extra pushover. And then I'm like,
we gotcha. We got you, True Blood writers.
We gotcha.
We saw it.
Yeah. Yeah. We see what you're doing.
We clocked it.
And then Sam plays, what a reveal.
I know.
On what these he
flashbacks.
Did in the past.
Yeah. It's all, you're almost like, ooh, I almost can't believe that that version can't of Sam that. Existed. Yeah.
He plays anger so great. He plays everything great. Yeah. He's one of my favorites.
My favorites. But yes, I think being, you know, when you have an actor like Sam, you really want to surround him with other incredible actors.
Yeah.
And that family unit, you know, it was the perfect build because you start out, you're like, ooh, they're trouble. Ooh, they showed up at his place. Ooh, they're in the in the yard. Bad. They're in the parking lot.
Yeah.
Ooh, I can see what this is. This is. And then it goes really, really bad.
Right.
But you're watching it grow and you can see why Sam would make all these allowances until it goes too far and he just cracks and it puts him in that dark place.
Yeah. It's hard for writers, I think, and I think True Blood does a good job where they're setting up a storyline, and yet they can't make it so obvious that we aren't rolling our eyes and going, like, you didn't see this coming.
Right.
I mean, I do often put in my notes, like, it's almost as if Sookie doesn't watch the show.
She doesn't.
Because Sookie does not watch the show.
Because Sookie doesn't have any time. Sookie doesn't sleep. She's up all night with a vampire. She's up all day with the humans. She looks great.
She looks amazing.
She has near-death experiences and still has time to do her makeup.
Right.
I'm always really impressed by Sookie's resilience.
I know, I'm very impressed.
Yeah.
And it's so tough for the writers because she's the lead of the show. It's like she just has to be the most resilient human being on the face of the
earth. They did let her nap a couple of times. They put her in a coma, which I thought was very kind.
Yeah, yeah.
Give her a few hours rest there.
Totally. Where she lost a lot of blood.
She did. A lot. How much blood, Kristen? A lot.
The doctor, he really has no information there, does he? She lost a lot of blood.
She didn't know.
How much blood? Well, a lot.
A lot.
Thanks, Doc.
Yeah, that really clears it up. It was done. I mean, I think, you know, Sookie goes back and forth. Does she trust Bill? Does she not trust Bill?
Right.
Eric goes back and forth. Is he on Russell's side? Is he on the Queen's side? Is he on, you
know? Is he going to listen to Godric?
Yeah.
Yes.
Bill.
No,
he's not. Bill's on, you know, is he with Lorena? Is he with Sookie? Is he with Russell? You know, like this whole season is very cat and mouse. You never really know who to trust, whose loyalty. We learn a lot is revealed about Bill and his, you know, nefarious beginnings here in Bon Temps. I do love he has that constant refrain of like, my ancestral birthright. Or like, he's like, I came back because it's, you know, basically where I'm from. But he has a very, you know, mid-19th century way of saying it.
I liked how he kept saying he was mad with Russell kidnapping him, where he kept saying, cross state lines.
Yes, across state lines.
I was like, he's really into this state line.
It's very legal.
He's very legal.
He's building a case, which is very important.
Right.
You got to build a case for kidnapping.
And
then we also, I think, you know, always a fan favorite is Terry and Arlene.
Yeah. Oh.
Again, these actors.
Oh, these actors.
Yeah.
Just killing me.
I know.
Just kill me. I pulled so many quotes from Terry, yeah. You know, I wrote down 10 reasons why you should trust me with your kids. And he's so happy.
Yeah.
You know, Sam goes to comfort him.
Yeah.
And he says, I've never been so all right.
Yeah.
You know, this is what normal people do.
Yeah. Well, Sam went to apologize for being a dickhead.
Right.
And Terry's like, and now we're better again. Like, he's just so happy about it.
Yeah.
And you know what's tough about that? Earnest characters, playing earnest characters can be very hard because, again, very easily they can become bland.
Right.
As we've talked about with, like, heroes versus villains,
yeah.
right? When you're a good guy,
you
have a very small box to play in.
Yeah.
And I think something that Todd, you know, does so well is figure out how to, you know, paint with every color in that box.
He is remarkable. Yeah. So many remarkable people. I mean, Ryan, it's tough to play the dumb guy. Yeah. I played that part for a long time and loved it. Ryan is so not like Jason.
Yes.
Couldn't be further from. And he's so funny and it's so touching.
Yes.
And you see how much he's struggling and with what he did.
Well, especially like with the Kitsch Maynard stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that it's this, he used to be hot shit, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's gone. And he has nothing, right? He's not a hero like Andy.
Right.
He's not, you know, a good guy like Hoyt.
Right.
He, you know, he doesn't have anything there. So he's searching for himself and what his value is in this world.
Right.
And that's it's an interesting story to give your, you know, cute male lead, you know?
It is.
A bit of that self-doubt of, you know, is that really matter anymore?
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, Rutina, well, every year.
The writers just know that she can handle it.
I know.
I mean, it's
she can just deliver
what
on
they
everything.
Put her through.
Oh, my goodness.
It's just unbelievable.
Yeah.
There's a lot of truth revealed this year,
mm-hmm.
huh?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of confessions.
Yeah, I think that's true.
You know, Jason admits to her what he did.
Yep.
She confronts Chris Bauer, Andy Belflor, who's a genius, and he fesses up.
Yep. Bill confesses to Sookie.
Bill confesses to Sookie. Sam admits that he's a shapeshifter.
And all of this past and everything. This was a lot about confession and a lot about love. It was interesting because I was thinking about this fear of intimacy that sort of Alan Ball brought up as an originating theme.
Right.
And this season seems to be focusing on once you've found that intimacy and experienced what that is to be fully, truly loved and to give love. What do you do when you're afraid you're going to lose it?
Right.
And almost every single storyline revolves around, I did this so I wouldn't lose you.
Or yeah, Lorena so and Bill, that's
Lorena
another
and
one.
Bill is huge, the storyline for that. It is Russell
and Talbot. Russell and Talbot, 100%.
It is Eric and Pam.
Yeah.
It is Eric and his father.
Yeah.
It is all about loss.
It is all about loss.
Not wanting to be alone.
Right.
So with that, let's move into some of our stuff that we're excited about, because I think Pam's storyline very much revolves around loss and losing the love and this death wish that suddenly Eric has. And of course, Hoyt and Jessica are very much, and with Bill talking about this, you know, losing people we love.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us what was this season like for you, Kristen?
Well, we had a scene together.
We had a scene. We did. We got to do a scene. We got you a phone call.
Yeah, we got to do a phone call. Well, I was going down on a gal.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like those
about
scenes.
Chainsaws, that's all.
Right. I like those scenes. I like both of them.
Me too. They're funny. I enjoyed getting to do more humor this year.
Yeah,
this year felt like there was some
more
humor, at least allotted for me.
Yeah.
Which I enjoyed.
And I had a little less humor.
Okay.
I had other stuff as well as humor.
Yes.
Right? Like, we start to see how much Eric means to her.
Yes. And how much she means to him. I mean, this entire, you know, his entire plot revolves around the fact that the magister was torturing you.
Right.
Right? Like, he doesn't go to Mississippi and do any of this if you're not in duress.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Oh, my God. You know, just working with Dennis, I'm remembering so many things. But the scene that we did together.
Mm-hmm. In the bathroom.
Yeah, yeah. I'm trying to remember, like, specifics about it. And I just have the dumbest recollection of, I had to put on lipstick in the scene.
Terrible idea. What were you thinking?
It's a terrible idea. What was I thinking?
Don't eat and don't apply makeup.
Right. I mean, I had an inch of lipstick, I had to keep blotting carefully between takes. So I was giving them to our sound guy, Larry. And I said, Sal goes on
Eve. Larry's job.
Larry's not supposed to hold your lipstick, right?
It became a funny gift thing. So I was signing them and giving them to our sound guy. And I said, sell those on eBay and tell me what you get. Give it to charity or whatever.
Yes.
Yeah. And I saw him recently and he said he never sold them.
Never sold them. Well, he's just got your lipstick. I'm sure he just threw them out. Or they're just sitting in his junk drawer.
I think he threw them out and he doesn't want to tell me. Because it's even weirder if he's coveting them somewhere.
He really should tell you that he threw them out.
He really should tell
that's
me.
Much
actually,
yeah.
he should
that's
tell
the
me.
Right
yeah, that's
to
a
me.
Little strange. In fact, I need to make sure that he threw them out.
Yes.
But I loved doing both scenes. I hadn't gone down on a woman before.
Yeah, exciting.
It was, and a little nerve-wracking mm-hmm. because I didn't quite know where to put my face.
That is a question, isn't it?
Yeah.
When we get into these intimate scenes, sort of how you make all of this work.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you have a conversation on set? Was it?
Well, no, she was like...
She's just game.
She was game. She got into the gynecology chair, posed, and had on this little underwear and was like, let's shoot.
All right.
And I'm like, I didn't want to be weird and be like, can I talk about this for a second? And then there was a discussion about how much lip gloss I should have on, right?
This is a great question.
And I was like, well, let's not be... Totally disgusting. Where I've got to do dialogue.
You're right.
I don't want to be upstaged by a wet face.
Yes, I think that's probably wise.
Right?
That was very wise. Yes.
So when I was watching it, I was like, yeah, it looks good. It looks a little bit like you can't tell where my head is.
Yes.
I
think it was very, very correctly and artistically shot. Yes.
Don't you think?
Yes, it totally works.
Yeah. I'm proud of the work I did there and that we did together. I love that scene.
Oh, boy.
I love what they wrote for me. I think of screaming children, soggy diapers, and maggots.
Well, again, I think any time a character like Pam is thrust into the caretaker position is just a great,
juxtaposition.
Imbalance.
That's a smart move.
Which is, again, a very smart move by the writers to have you be Jessica's mentor. And, that always, because especially watching it back now, I go they really left Jess all alone.
Hold on. I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Are you released?
So here's the thing. No, because obviously we play that later.
Okay.
So there must be something where you have to accept it or I don't know.
I don't know that spoiler.
He tries to, and I say, what does that mean? And I say,
what are you talking about?
But nothing has. So I don't know if the rules for releasing changed over the seasons is my guess.
He's a bad father, I have to say.
So I was watching this and the whole time he gives Sookie a call, even though he's pushing her away. Not once. I've got a progeny somewhere that I should maybe, text or worry about
you.
Anything. Nada. I was actually getting seriously irked about it.
As you should.
She's just a little vampire. She's 3 weeks old.
Right.
Figure something out for her. But then Sookie leaves, so there's no Sookie.
Right.
There's no Bill. And then she and Hoyt, Jessica and Hoyt have broken up. So I was I was alone.
You were alone.
Absolutely no one.
Yeah.
And there's a dead man under the house.
Yeah.
That it's my fault.
Yeah.
I just was like, wow, that is watching it back now, really feeling like, wow, that is a position to put a young vampire in right there.
Yeah.
And it makes sense to reach out to you.
It does.
And it makes sense to avoid at all costs the one good person in the world, Hoyt.
Yeah.
Because you are clearly, no one wants anything to do with me.
Right.
And I'm a menace to society. Just fascinating.
Yeah, he's just a sweet guy.
Yeah.
So you should definitely do the right thing and reject him.
There's that great, because once Bill finally comes back, and those, to me, the Bill and Jessica scenes almost are always my favorite scenes.
Yeah, those are great.
For myself.
I love that scene when he comes back and tries to release you.
He tries to release me.
And then he's going up the stairs and you go, I love him, right?
Isn't well, this like is that? So we, the scene later after he's agreed to not release me, I guess, to take it back. I don't know, whatever happened there. You know, because we both admit that we're alone. And so we have that in common and I need him. Mm-hmm. And then after he's teaching me to fight, we have this conversation where I say, why aren't you with Sookie? And he says, because it's better for her. I'm a danger to her.
Yeah.
And I say, well, I love Hoyt.
Right.
And I understand because he should have a good person who's as good as he is and who can give him the things that he wants. And I think that even though Jessica and Hoyt get together, ultimately, that's the logic that carries through into the later seasons. Because I think Jessica's right.
Yeah.
I think that the things that Hoyt wants, the life that Hoyt wants, is just not something that she can give him and vice versa.
Right. Right. That you have some really, always you have great stuff with Jim. Mm,
well, I mean, we really, Jim and I, you know, talk about like when you're doing intimate stuff and say, Jim and I would talk extensively about what we were comfortable with, what we wanted to do, because I have this strong belief that when it comes to intimate scenes, if you want them to feel real and authentic and spontaneous, you actually have to be very clear about boundaries.
Right.
Because if I know exactly where we are comfortable with touch, then I can improvise within that space and it feels very genuine and spontaneous and connected.
Right.
Versus if I'm nervous that if I touch you here or we kiss here, or something,
right,
then you get hesitancy and it doesn't play as well. So I think Jim and I were actually like doing the work of intimacy coordinators.
You were.
Before intimacy coordinators existed, which meant that in a very safe, comfortable space, he and I sat down and talked about what this would look like. And again, that's not, you know, necessarily a step-by-step play-by-play, but it was talking about boundaries and we would check in throughout the day and say, hey, is that still good by you? Are you okay here? You know, and that kind of thing. And I think that is part of the reason why that love story plays so well. It's because we were so comfortable with each other.
Yeah, it's been so long since I had to do scenes like that, you know, and I'm thinking back and it was just sort of like they would go, okay, let's shoot. I think everyone was uncomfortable and they would just try to like go to a field of daisies and between action and cut, like what stays in Vegas stays in Vegas.
Yeah, so I
but that's not comfortable.
No, I always had the opposite. I always looked forward to love scenes because if you did that work,
it
was fun.
That's it.
And it was like being 16 again.
Yeah.
And like falling in love for the first time. But again, it was safe because this is pretend.
Yeah.
And you know, any partners outside of the relationship are understand and all of that. But you just get to lean into that aspect of yourself a little bit. And, and that those initial stirrings of oh, someone likes me, you know, kind of thing. And then when it's cut, you go, thank you so much. You shake their hand and you go back to your life.
Right.
You know, and I can't recommend more to young actors, to anyone, you know, starting to do scenes like that in their careers, just being really honest about what your boundaries are and where you are and laying out that groundwork. I think it makes all the difference.
I think it's huge. If you have those guardrails, you can really play in there because you are feeling intimate.
Yes.
And being intimate.
Yes.
And if you've got another part of your mind going, wow, this really feels intimate. Oh, am I going too far? Right, am I not going far enough? Is this person thinking, what are they thinking? You can't have,
it'll read.
It'll read.
Yeah. And it's the last thing that you want to read. Yeah. So, you know, either you're Anna and Steve and you're deeply in love and,
they don't have
and you have no boundaries.
I mean, maybe they don't have those. Maybe they do have those conversations because they're like, look, I don't want our personal life. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I love that scene where you confess to him. Mm. Again, another confession. Mm-hmm. You convince.
There you go.
I killed a shark. And he's like, well, I'm sure he deserved it.
She's like, no.
He just loves you so much. He's like, well, truckers are bad.
That's the Hoyt thing, right?
That's like, the Hoyt thing.
Hoyt can't help but see the best in everyone. And again, Jess is never going to be able to be that person for him. You know, it's such a perfect first relationship. They just idolize each other and put each other on these pedestals that neither of them can live up to. And as we move into season four, we'll see how that starts to fall apart a bit, you know?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I won't give spoilers, but yeah, beautiful relationship that you have there. Beautiful relationship with your maker. That is cute. I remember that scene where he's teaching you to fight.
Yeah, to fight.
And that comes in then because you take on the wolves.
I finally can go fight the wolves.
I know that Britt and Anna and Sookie and Debbie Pelt had an amazing time doing that fight scene.
Yes. Oh, I'm sure that they did. I mean, what a great
those
night
two
that
just
is.
Went for it and had boundaries and trusted each
same,
other.
Exactly the same thing as a fight sequence, right? Like you want to have all the vigor and feeling of like, I'm going to rip your face off behind that punch without ever punching. You know, so it's the same thing with, with an intimacy scene. You want to have all that verve of like, oh, I love you and I just want all this without ever actually crossing anyone's boundary.
Right.
It's great.
It is amazing. I'm remembering right before that scene, Anna looking, Sookie looking out that window, holding a gun. And I'm like, God, she just stays in that house no matter what. If you think about the last three seasons.
And and the foyer is still dirty for Marianne. They have not had an opportunity to clean up because it's been about a week. I know.
Right? It's been about a week. And it's still dirty.
And it's still
dirty. But she's like, you know what? I'm good. And then she says to Bill, like, no, you can go because you'll know if I'm in danger.
Right, right, right. Well, but that's the thing, right? The vampires can't get in.
Right.
So she's safe from vampires in her house. But the werewolves can walk right in.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's tricky. Oops.
Yeah, oops.
So talk to me about losing Eric because it is such, I mean, watching the pain that Pam goes through, seeing him make these decisions and write a will and... Mm-hmm. You know, I think you have one great line where you're like, I don't give a fuck about your farm and
It's a windy shithole.
It's a windy shithole. Like, I don't want to inherit your crap, you know? Like, it's just so great. But it's classic Pam, right?
Yeah.
It's the deflection of her real deep feelings. Yeah. What was that like?
Yeah, and he says, I like you better when you're cold and heartless. Oh, that's so sweet. I'm in it. Yeah, and it... A funny aside, I have to say Oland in that line. And Alex would say to me, it's Oland, not Oland. And I'm like, right, you just said the same thing twice, by the way, to my ear. And he's like, no, listen, Oland versus Oland. I'm like, right. And he's like, but one is in one country and one is in another country.
No.
And I'm like, right. Anyway. Oland? No, that's the one in Denmark. Oland? Right. You got it right. I'm saying the same thing, dude. So and while I'm trying to be emotional, my whole mind is like trying to I never heard a difference.
Oh, my God.
But it was nice to start growing that relationship where she says, you know, you would have done anything to save Godric.
Yes.
Right? That's...
These makers, man, they don't seem like it's the same thing.
Yeah.
Like,
right.
They don't seem to look at like their makers and how they feel and push it down.
Right.
Because Bill and Lorena have that conversation about her maker.
Right.
And what he did to her and how she's, and you know, it's just like human
children,
you know,
totally
ancestors. Like we just keep passing on this generational crap.
Yes.
So I like that Pam and Jessica in this season call their makers out. And
are
like, don't pass that crap on to me.
Yes, I do too. That whole sequence with Eric burning.
Yes.
It's a little confusing, isn't it? Because I'm thinking Eric is like, to hell with you, Godric. I'm not going to forgive him.
Right.
And then Sookie saves Eric. The names are always challenging for me. And then once they get inside Fantasia, he goes, go get Dennis.
Yeah, there's a lot of flip-flopping. He's very conflicted.
He's very conflicted.
Yeah.
Hey, that cement sequence.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I just heard that it costs something like $50,000 or something.
Wow.
Yeah, to mix that goo.
Because it can't be cement, of course.
Right. So it's like colored oatmeal? What is it?
It must be. That's a lot of oatmeal, though.
Well,
it's $50,000 worth of oatmeal, apparently. Well, before we finish here, I also want to give one other shout out, just because she was so spectacular and I was so glad that she came in, to Melissa Rauch, who played Summer. She's so funny. A number of her improvised lines made it into the show.
Yeah.
She's spectacular.
She is.
I love her and Dale Raul as a little duo. I think they're so funny. And there were moments during this episode, even as the person who played Jessica Hamby and is rooting for Hoyt to go back to Jessica Hamby, I'm like, oh, Hoyt, just marry her. She's so cute.
She's so cute.
She's a little bit of a bigot, but she's really cute.
There's a lot of references to her height from you and her.
Yes, because I'm so tall. Yeah, they're really playing off Jim's that contrast. And Jim's so tall. Yeah, and Jim is so tall, which was very, very
sweet.
Yeah,
she's fabulous.
Yeah. My main recollection story from all of this is there's the scene where I have to, you know, Hoyt tells me he loves me. And I says, look me in the eye and tell me you don't love me. And I try to do it, which is so heartbreaking. I watched that back and I was like, oh, I tried to say it. So he walks right out. And then Tommy attacks him in dog form.
Yeah.
And then I run out to tell him, I've changed my mind. I love you. And see this. And I had to sprint vampire speed across the gravel, a parking lot, and middle pick up the dog and throw it into the woods. And, I am 100% actor. You know, I'm that kind of an actor. So I sprinted. I ran as fast as I could, which is not something that you should do in gravel and tiny little, you know, ballet flats.
Right.
I skid into home plate. Ooh. my clothes were a mess. My knees were all scratched up.
Oh, that's so
my gravel. Arms on the gravel. It was bad. Mostly my pride was wounded.
Oh, yeah,
more.
That's sad to fall.
Because, you know, I was like a young 20 something person who was trying to be it's cool on my TV show.
And then everyone's like, you okay? And you're like, yeah, totally good. Blood's running down your legs.
Like, oh, no, yeah, it's just, yeah. But then our UPM came down and basically I got kind of a talking to.
You got scolded.
I got scolded because I guess like if I they can't shoot it if I look different or if I get injured or things like that.
He's like mad at you for hurting yourself.
And I was like, I didn't do it on purpose. Like that's just what acting looks like sometimes when you try to give up. And then of course I realized, oh, they're gonna vampire speed it up and it doesn't matter what I do.
Which would have been good to know.
I think I did know that. But I'm 100%. One of those people. I'm just 100%er no matter what.
Right.
And I found with the vamp speed stuff, like I wanted to be moving fast so that when they stopped the vamp speed, my hair would move.
Totally.
You know, like things that
totally
in the environment would be affected by
you
that
would
speed.
Definitely would have to do that last 10 feet anyway and hit the ground somehow.
In somehow, yeah.
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 Yeah. Well, God love ya.
And they all healed. I'm all better.
And you healed. Yeah. I had in future seasons, I have some running on that same gravel where I.
Are you in heels? At least I was in flats.
I was in heels and I had prosthetics and I had one eye.
Oh, Kristen. Save it for season 4. Welcome to Kristen's Clip Corner.
Hello, friends and enemies. It's a beautiful day on the bayou. Today, we'd like to share with you a few of the snappiest, sexiest, and silliest one-liners from the hundreds we heard this season on True Blood.
I gotta say, Kristen, most of my favorite picks are Pam.
Okay, so I gotta say, Deb, that most of my favorite picks are Pam. All right, kids, feast your ears on this.
There's werewolves?
Yes.
Holy shit. Bigfoot, is he real too?
I don't know. I guess it's possible.
Santa?
Jason, focus.
I'm sorry you fell in love with a serial killer, all right? But honestly, who here hasn't?
You're a good guy, Staghouse. You've got a lot of heart. Prettier than most girls.
This is funny. I never really thought I was smart enough to get depressed, but here I am.
He looked like he got bombed by radiation on his way to middle school. That's a giant sixth grade boy right there.
They killed my cooter.
What?
Blah, blah, vampire emergency, blah.
Excuse me, gentlemen. I need to drain the second course.
Carlo, bring me that Thai boy.
Stepping around the fact that your words are worth about as much as tits on a turtle? What up?
We will eat you. After we eat your children.
Now time for the whirl. Tiffany?
So, Deb, you had this great idea of talking about acting methods. Mm. It is fantastically interesting that there are real schools of how to do this.
Yes.
And then we work with all these people, and we all show up having done that preparatory work, and we don't discuss it really with each other. We all just hit our mark and do our thing, and we don't know what's happening over there.
Yeah, when especially in film where there's no rehearsal, right?
Right.
If you're used to theater, you're seeing a little bit of people's process through that. I mean, not all of it, because again, so much happens at home or just in your life.
Right.
But with this, I mean, if you get one rehearsal for marks, you're lucky.
Right.
And I think True Blood, we were very lucky in that we did actually get a couple of rehearsals to get it in our, you know, how did we want to do it? What do we need to do for what the director wants? And then show it to everyone. So we actually were able to see a little bit. But yes, that we're all coming to this with our own unique, special processes, method of how we do this. And at the end of the day, when you watch it on screen, you're seeing all of those different things come together into one whole.
Right.
Which is so amazing to me to know that we can work differently for a united goal. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. I mean, we're making art as a group.
Yes.
That I miss so much since the pandemic and now the strike.
Yeah.
Because I do solo art on my own and you do too. But that thing of having a whole world in your own head and then also responding to another person who has a whole world in their head and this heightened reality, but it has to be caught on film or it didn't happen.
Right.
Right? There's this hardcore reality that you must abide by. And you can't have a shadow on your face. You're finding your light. So there's a very practical side of you, you know, waiting for the camera to land as it's moving before you say your line and et cetera. You know, I really was in my vampire world. You crossed over into the human world now.
Yes, I got, well, I get to be at Merlot's a little bit. I get to be at Fantasia a little bit. I get to be with, I got to do a little of all the worlds.
You did. And so you saw more actors than I did.
Potentially. Yes, I think that's true.
Right? Like Ryan, I rarely work with, but I couldn't believe how I find him incredibly impressive.
Watching him work, I think people, you see the end product and you can see that he's brilliant. Mm. But when you watch him work and you see how unique every take is.
Every take is different.
How brave he is. He makes, he follows his gut and makes choices that I go, wow, if that, that works only because he committed to it 100%.
Yes.
I learned a lot working with Ryan, and
he's
incredible. That's one of the really fun things about working on a show with so many great actors is working with people and stealing, you know, just full on being like, ooh, I love that thing that you did. You know, like, how can I incorporate, how can I cultivate that idea or that work into what I do?
Yeah. He's really, really amazing with behavior. So I've gone the other way, which luckily worked for Pam.
Yeah.
But I find continuity to be a bit of a trap because, right? Because you walk through it in those one or two blocking rehearsals, and unless it says there, and it often does actually on the page, she takes a sip of True Blood. Right. And I was like, yep, just not going to do that.
Yeah.
And the prop guy has read it and he's on it. So he brings me my True Blood. And I'm like, good, thanks. Because I know I'm going to have to drink 50 gallons of True Blood.
And in the same spot.
In the same.
They're going to have to refill it if you can see in there.
Every time.
And that can be a trap. And if that's the kind of thing that would throw you, you learn not to put yourself in that trap.
Yeah.
But if you're Ryan Kwanten and it doesn't throw you, what a beautiful play space, right? And I will say there are continuity errors all over this show because of Ryan being so involved with his props in the world. Yes. I catch it all the time. Beer, you know, levels change. But it doesn't fucking matter.
It doesn't matter. You don't.
I just don't even care because what he's doing is so specific and so good that I'm like, whatever.
Whatever.
Like, whatever you need to do to be that amazing, I 100% support.
And I only got to do one scene with Sam, but he just feels like he actually is Sam Raimi.
Yeah.
And he just lives in the bar, and we all came there to be around him, and there's a camera today.
Yeah.
He feels so natural.
Very natural, easy.
Yeah.
Which is kind of a, it feels very old school when I think of the Paul Newmans.
Yeah.
And, you know, they feel very easy in their roles. And that's not to say that that is easy.
Well, that's the thing, right? Because I was looking up, because you were delineating very wonderfully these different methods. Classical method, kind of old school, crafted out of the imagination and skills of the performer. But the method, Stanislavski, and the method, Lee Strasberg, I believe that's the actor's studio.
Yes, when
comes
people,
from Stanislavski.
When people, so when people talk about being a method actor, generally they're talking about three sort of, I don't want to say disciples, but like three people who studied Stanislavski. So Stanislavski, we sort of call the father of modern acting.
Right.
Previous to Stanislavski, we had classical acting, which was sort of representative. Think like opera and silent film, right? Like you had to telegraph what was going on to an audience that did not have cell phones or maybe binoculars.
Right.
So it was very large, very clear acting.
Right.
And the idea was that you might have emotional experiences in rehearsal that you would then mimic in performance to have authenticity, but that you weren't trying to actually have the experience every performance.
Right.
So it's definitely more representational.
Right.
Stanislavski then comes in at the sort of end of the 19th century and says, well, what if
you felt it?
You felt it. What if in performance you were as alive as you were in rehearsals?
And in your life,
And in your life, exactly. Yeah. That maybe we can add to telling the story this visceral, emotional part that seems to move people when we are around each other.
And would move your body in a certain way that you might not have known.
It becomes less crafted and more instinctual, and so out of his method, and he's writing in Russian, and so this gets translated into English and many other languages. And the three sort of pioneering people that translate and then start teaching this again are Lee Strasberg, Stella Adler, and Sanford Meisner. Of course, there are others, Michael Chekhov, and a lot of other people. But when we think about like American method acting, those are the three folks.
Yeah. I went and looked at those three schools when I was looking at studying somewhere, because I was a window washer, I was a receptionist at a hair salon, I was selling Herbalife, and I was a painter, and then I started doing makeup, and then I was on a set, and I was like, that looks like a better job, so I better go figure out how to, like, maybe I could do this.
Right.
So anyway, I don't know, Milton Katselis is where I studied. Uh-huh. For a long time, but he studied at the Actor's Studio.
Yes, so that's Strasberg,
right?
Yes.
So, it was very interesting looking at those three different schools, and I feel like, well, Dennis O'Hare was the most remarkable to witness in person,
and I've seen him on stage.
Me too.
Which is, I know,
I'm gonna cry. It's like he's, because for me, you know, I've learned all this technique, and then you sort of, you know, it's just in. You feel like you threw it out, but you didn't. Because you're using it. But there is, you know, when you're filming a scene for 10 freaking hours and you have 150 takes and your close-up is going to be last, I'm always pacing. So I'm phoning it in until that camera's on me.
Yeah.
Just enough to give the other actor enough, just enough. And probably
you want to make sure that you have the emotional well or resources available for when they're coming to capture that moment.
That's it. You know, hour 14, and this is, you know, a big moment.
Right.
And the well is run dry, and I just honestly want to be home.
Right. Right.
Right. But Dennis, I think Dennis is so remarkable, and we'll talk about it with him, but he goes all the way through to the other side and comes back and makes everyone in the room a better
See,
player.
That's who I aspire to be. My principle or my theory of all this is that I act yes, it's an entertainment. Yes, people are going to watch it and enjoy it. But I act because I love acting. So any opportunity.
I know. Yeah, that's not, that I wouldn't recommend going that way.
Any opportunity that I get to act, I want to do it.
Yeah.
And that, to me, it doesn't really matter whether it gets caught on a camera or not, right, or whether it's in front of an audience or not. I want to constantly be asking myself to be present and fully engaged in every moment. And so that's when I say I'm 100%er, if I'm off camera, if I'm in rehearsal, if it's the first take or the last take, my close up or behind my head, I want to be fully
seen that. Yeah. And you do theater, which is a major
component. Strengthens
that
muscle. Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. That strengthens that muscle. But again, I think it's, you know, to look at that and say, I don't think anyone would. There might be taste differences when people watch different types of performances, but it's never a quality difference, right? It is always that everyone is really giving something that they uniquely are good at.
Right.
You know, Ryan and what he can do, we marvel at it because he is uniquely great at it. And what you can uniquely do by using your process, we marvel at it.
And every actor can't play every role.
No.
Right. So somehow the writing marries up magically with the actor.
Yeah.
And the casting director and producers go, I'm going to choose that version. Because there's probably five versions that work.
Yeah. And you know, even if every actor could play it, you have to allow for the fact that they will be vastly different people.
Vastly.
Right?
Right.
And on TV, we're not really looking for that. They have an idea in mind, which is, again, why in theater, we keep doing these plays over and over and over again, because each person's Juliet, each person's Lear is so uniquely them.
Yeah.
And this is, you know, my process. I always call, and this is Stanislavski talks about given circumstances and magic if and things like that. These are all buzzwords for actors. Mm-hmm. What's your motivation? All of that thing. But for me, I love Declan Donnellan and The Actor and the Target. That is my favorite acting book. It's the one that comes closest to my process. And he talks about looking at the world through their eyes. Mm. It's you. Right?
Mm-hmm.
I am Jessica Hamby.
Mm-hmm.
And when I look through Jessica's eyes, what do I see when I see Bill?
Right.
So it's not so much, you know, Strasberg was very focused on your personal psychological experiences.
And a lot of your past.
You draw a lot on your past and you're using your, you know, personal experiences to kind of give you that support, emotional support. Adler was very much about imaginative. So rather than using your personal experiences, you're using your imagination, but you're going to the nth degree. Mm-hmm. So if it's someone, you know, dying in front of you, and you know that like the color red and gushes of blood are very evocative, whether that's happening or not, you use your imagination to bring you to the space that, you know, is required for the scene. And Meisner is all about the other actor.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I think Declan Donnellan is closest. It's about the targets.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, I don't actually have to create fear. I create the monster.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't figure out how to be scared. Mm-hmm. I look through the eyes of Jessica Hamby and I see a monster.
Mm-hmm.
And I create every little terrifying part of that monster.
Mm-hmm.
And then I don't have to do any work.
Right.
Then I just get to be scared of the monster.
Right.
And the great thing is that your body is, especially if you train in this and you do this a lot, it just gives in. You find your hands start to shake. Your heartbeat starts to get faster. You start to sweat because our imaginations are so good. And all, any of us can do this.
Yeah, we do it all the time.
We do it. Everyone,
think about going to the dentist.
Oh, my God. Everyone watches Forrest Gump and cries at the end, right? Yes. We know that's not true.
That's not
a true story. But we cry because we can be affected by things that we know aren't true.
Yeah.
Every single one of us is laying in bed at night and heard a noise and go,
right,
there's someone in the house.
Right.
We know it's probably a branch on the window. But again, your body responds. Acting is just doing that on purpose.
Right.
So for me, my homework is to go home and create those targets. Mm-hmm. It's to think about, what do I see when I look at Bill? What do I see when I look at Hoyt? What do I see when I look at the steps, you know, those front steps where he and I broke up? Mm-hmm. What do I think when I see a bottle of True Blood, you know, like, and filling in all, and that can be joy and sadness at the same time, right? Mm-hmm. It is a whole experience. And then you just kind of throw yourself into that arena mm-hmm. and let it affect you. And anytime another character speaks to me, I like my thoughts to be, well, what did they mean by that? Mm-hmm. So rather than going...
Know your next line, yeah.
Know my next line, or even like there's a lot of motivation. Like, what's my motivation? What do I want? And I'm like, I'm in a lot of conversations in my normal life where I'm not thinking about what I want.
Right.
But rather, what do they want?
Right.
And am I going to give it to them?
Right.
That inspires me so much.
Right.
What does Hoyt want? He wants me back. He wants me to say I love him, or he wants me to tell him that I hate him and I never want to see him again.
Yeah.
What am I going to give him?
Right.
And I look at that man and I go, that's the person who first I met right over there. Right?
Right.
And it's easy. Then acting is easy.
Yeah.
Doing all of that prep work and imagining all of that and remembering all of that and then just sitting and looking through her eyes.
Yeah.
But it's me.
Yeah.
It just is like it all falls away and you can get emotional over and over and over again. And sometimes not.
Yeah.
Absolutely 100%. There are times when like nothing bubbles up and you just let nothing bubble up. Yeah. And frankly, even if that makes the take, I always find that authenticity reads better
than faking
it. Than manufacturing it 100 times over.
Yeah.
Even if it's the inappropriate emotion for that moment.
Right.
But also, I faked it sometimes. Like sometimes the script says you have to cry and they want to see tears.
Right.
And you go, all right.
Okay. Got to bring up my dead dog.
And you do the best that you can.
You do the best you can.
You do the best you can. And I think most actors are pretty good mimics also. Mm-hmm. So you draw on all of those skills.
All of the
sets.
Tools that you have for each situation. It's very lucky when the writing and the person that you're acting with, it's just there.
Oh, when it all lines up. Isn't it magic?
Yeah, I had that a lot.
It's absolute magic. Same here. I mean, with Jim and Ryan and Steve, who are my, you know, main scene partners through this show.
I know, we're so lucky.
How much I learned, how much I got to practice, really, like, changed my life and my art.
Same here. So lucky.
Next time on Truest Blood, we have Britt Morgan here to talk about her time on the show playing Debbie Pelt, one of the most unhinged villains to grace the screen.
Yes, Britt brought nuance and spontaneity to that role, keeping us on the edge of our seats. She is also one of the sweetest people you are bound to meet.
So thanks for listening, Truebies. Subscribe and follow wherever you listen to your podcasts, and we'll see you next week.
Y'all come back now, you hear.
Truest Blood is produced by Safe Haven for HBO. Executive producers are Janina Gavankar, Kristen Bauer, and Deborah Ann Wool. Our producer is Gabrielle Gallon, and our audio producer is Christopher Wool. Our theme song was recorded just for this podcast by Jace Everett. Additional music was composed by Timo Chen. And remember, you can watch all of the original episodes of True Blood on Max.